This is the Saxo Market Call, daily insights on what is moving the financial markets.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It is Monday, 30th of May, 2022. And as we left for holidays last week here in Denmark, we had quite a squeeze follow through in the U.S. markets on Thursday and Friday. I guess that's what we have to call it at this point. There were signs, we'd mentioned these previously, and actually before we even bottomed out, that that sentiment was extremely stretched to the negative side. And we do all know that historically the biggest rallies in markets happen in the context of a bear market. So, two pretty strong sessions there, to say the least. The squeeze continues. And actually on our podcast with Kim on Thursday, or it was recorded last Wednesday and put out on last Thursday, he mentioned 4,200 as an important resistance level. And we're already there essentially today. So what's your take on the status of the squeeze? I don't think it really changes our mind in the sort of longer term fundamental outlook here. I think that was expressed in our special edition podcast, Peter, on Friday, talking about major bear markets and whether that's what we're headed for here and how long those take, et cetera. But yeah, what's your general take here?
Yeah, I think you sum it up pretty well, John. We are now four trading sessions into this rebound that started on Wednesday. And as you say, we did sort of indicate that it could happen. But as you say, it doesn't really change anything. And I put in on slide two the month to date sorted on performance. So you can see what really have happened this month. So you have energy storage, renewable energy, semiconductors, China's small growth companies and commodities doing extremely well for the month. And then despite the rebound, bubble stocks, cybersecurity, crypto, e-commerce have done really, really, really bad. I'm looking at the 13,000 level in the NASDAQ 100 futures index as the key next level for technology stocks, because I think it is the technology stocks that are worth watching. And before we quickly go to Ole, I just want to quickly highlight that on slide three, Sequoia Capital have put out, and Benchmark Capital have put out, you can find that on Twitter, links to that, have put out presentations which they sent out to founders of these companies that they invest in, where they're basically saying that, capital was free, now it's expensive. Companies burning capital were performing the best, now they're the worst performers. And they're talking about how basically it's a guidebook for what companies need to do. And it's basically, get to profitability as fast as possible. If you haven't cut costs already, you're probably already way behind, maybe too much behind. So you can just feel that this is the absolute frontier of risk capital, and they're really putting out a very dim outlook. And they say the interest rates is you have to respect that, and it's potentially could move higher. So so I really encourage people to read those documents. Find them on Twitter. You can see some of the things here on slide three, what you can search on to find it. It gives you a good idea of how Silicon Valley is thinking right now.
Cool. And I just wanted to mention, you mentioned the 13,000 level in NASDAQ 100. I wanted to provide some additional perspective on technicals. I think it was interesting to note, if you look back at that rally back in March, and I think it ended right at the end of March there, maybe it spilled over into early April, that was actually exceeded the 61.8% retracement, which was a major stopping point on the way up, and actually got to the 76.4 before rolling over from above 4,600 to all the way to that slide to the 3,800 area lows. And on this current rally, just using the 61.8 perspective from the prior top there in late March, early April, we're not at the 61.8 until 43.16. So it just, these things can really extend quite a bit, and before we can start talking about absolute reversals here. All right, let's get over to the market that I think you would agree, Ole, is going to rapidly become the dominant focus if we continue higher here, and that is energy prices. We had Brent closing the week, and I emphasize the weekly close because we saw those wild spikes that weren't really sustained more than a day or two. It was just below the highest weekly close for the cycle here, near $120. I think this is going to quickly steal the focus if we start running several dollars higher from here.
Yeah, we're seeing the inflationary pressures already also adding some support to the investment metal market. We're seeing gold trading above 60. We'll talk about that a little bit later. But yes, you are right. We broke above that 115 area last week. We continued higher today. As you can see on the chart here on slide seven, the 124 just below is the next target for the market. And what's driving is this is the same old. We got tight market condition driven by by worries or by sanctions on Russia. And in addition to that, we saw some further easing of lockdowns in China, some stimulus also being rolled out. And at the same time, the U.S. driving season basically kicks off today. It's a memorial holiday in the U.S., and that normally signals the beginning of the driving season. And we do expect a strong season, even though we got the prices of gasoline and fuel at very high prices, because we've been locked up for the past 2 years. People just want to get out on the road at almost whatever cost, and then we'll pick up the pieces afterwards. But that is, I think, is the reason why we'll continue to see this market pick up. We got an OPEC Plus meeting this Thursday. I think it's irrelevant. It has become increasingly irrelevant. They're not doing anything to support the market, probably mostly because they simply can't. They haven't got the ability to increase production right now, and especially with Russia also being seeing a slowdown in production. Finally, on this slide, just the things we will be keeping an eye on is obviously gasoline inventories in the U.S., but also from a WTI perspective, the storage levels at Cushing, which you can see in the top right, is well below where we normally find that stock level at the time of year. So that's also adding some support to prices as we are running low on fuel.
And we have to remember, this is with a strong dollar, these oil prices, such a different picture from the 2011 to 2014 period. And just from my personal perspective, filling up my car this weekend at almost $2.50 per liter of unleaded gasoline. These are really going to start to destroy demand quickly.
It is indeed, and that's really what we're facing now, that if we can't get supply up and demand remains robust, well, then we have to drive price up to levels where demand starts to get negatively impacted. Finally, just a quick note, and the reason why we're not seeing any real pickup from producers is highlighted on the forward curve. Just look at the forward curve here on WTI and Brent. The blue line is the WTI forward curve 5 years out. WTI is trading nearly $50 below current prices. Wow. That is not a major incentive for producers who has got a long-term horizon to get the act or get the drilling going. So that's another obstacle for the market.
All right. And then your perspective on metals here, we're still waiting for this recovery. I mean, we mentioned this last week in the technical outlook as well, that it was such a crushing sell-off that reversed the entire previous rally. There's a lot of work to do if we're supposed to be looking higher again.
Yeah, exactly. And we haven't seen that runaway break just yet. And that's basically means that we need to take out that 1868 level in gold. That's, as you can see, it's the 38.2% retracement of that $211 sell-off we had between April and May. In addition, copper as well, right now finding some support from the reopening in China. And I think we should keep an eye on that, because that, if we see a break high in copper, then that could also add some additional support to silver, and that could see silver outperform gold. It has already done that. It's risen to a 3 week high relatively to gold.
Yeah, and then you've got your weekly report on the futures positioning out, which with that data coming in on Friday. So you're seeing some activity in grains.
Yeah, exactly, John. There's been some net selling now for 4 out of the last 5 weeks in grains. Are the speculators preempting a sell-off in correction in the market? I think from a global perspective and food security, that would be very, very welcomed. If you just look at the data during the past 12 years, every time we've seen the net long across these six major grain futures that are highlighted here on slide 9, every time it's broken above 800,000 lots, we've had subsequent and major correction in the market. We saw that most recently late last year, where the market, where we saw a quite a significant reduction in the net long. And for now, we've been net sellers for 4 out of the past 5 weeks. Again, it's not scientific, but just an indication that maybe we are running out of further increases here in the short term, at least.
Well, let's hope so. There was an additional headline story I noticed with Putin even willing to open up for the ability of Ukraine to export grains. Let's hope nothing develops in the wrong direction in food prices. All right, let's roll back a little bit to the situation for the FX market. And I just want to highlight one idiosyncratic story here, and that is the Hungarian forint and Hungary itself. And Mr. Orban's behavior, some might argue dictator Orban's behavior after he declared a state of emergency last week, under which his government and he himself can essentially rule by decree. He's speaking up as a lone voice against the EU plans, and these are being discussed heavily today and tomorrow in a meeting to embargo Russian oil. He's trying to trade his willingness to go with this plan with them dropping the, what are these called, the conditionality mechanism, basically the mechanism that is preventing EU budget funds from reaching Hungary because of the obvious rule of law concerns in the country, freedom of press, etc. and he wants a swap line with the ECB. There's also a news story last week that prompted that big bar you see on Euro Huff on slide four, where it jumped from the low 380s to well above 390 in a special move against windfall taxes. the approach that I think we're going to see mimicked elsewhere, but this sort of a unilateral move to tax excess, what it calls excess profits, not moving in the right direction. We've talked to earlier as well about the massive public wage a boost to help buy the election in early April. I just wonder why this Euro Huff is not soaring and very far above 400 at this point, but just an idiosyncratic risk and an interesting one. And then elsewhere, the story in general, if you look on slide five, the various trend strength readings is the dollar weakness here. Although I must say it's fairly muted relative to what we're seeing in the squeeze higher and risk sentiment in equity markets over the last couple of sessions. So we have seen a weaker dollar, but it's not running away here as equity markets are running away a bit. So that's maybe a little note of resilience there. We're working into some key resistance areas. If you look at something like euro dollar, so dollar support areas in the high 107s, that was a previous range low, as I've shown around here at 107.60 on euro dollar. And then the bigger area, 108 plus, was that big low in March after the invasion of Ukraine by Russia. But the trend, if you zoom out to the week, the trend is so well entrenched that we could afford probably something like a move to that 61.8% retracement level to 110 plus without impacting the structural situation here. Still, I think it's best for the bears if we roll over in this area here, because we've crossed back above some key major market lows from prior prior months and years in the past. The pandemic lows, 106.35, and then that ultimate low stretching back almost 20 years from 2017 at 103.40. I'm jabbering on here, but I just want to mention one other situation. That is something like Aussie dollar and dollar CAD. We're getting on life support for the dollar situation there. So the US dollar situation there. So 72.56 area in Aussie dollar, it's starting to look like a full-on reversal. Some of that linked to the story and hopes around Chinese stimulus. We have this 50-point plan out of Shanghai to help boost growth. We have hopes that we're going to see COVID lockdowns lifting. And this is driving some sentiment shift, but I think there's a problem with the narrative here. Part of the reason equities are rallying, Peter, is we've got yields coming in a bit lower. The market trying to say that last week's PCE core out of the U.S. on Friday was out at 4.9%, well below the 5.2% year-on-year from the prior month. Hey, inflation has peaked. We can all go back to looking at some buying opportunities here. But if China is coming on board with some demand, we're going to see these oil prices driving fresh inflationary fears. I just see a narrative problem from these levels. I don't know if you agree with that or where you want to pick up the thread on equities.
Yeah, as we talked about, I mean, there are so many moving parts and factors and dynamics here. To me, as you say, China, if it come back, what will that add to inflation? And then more importantly, as Ole mentioned, then, on commodities, we still have an enormous energy crisis in front of us, and not at least Europe going into the winter months with Russia still not being part of the global supplies or not to the same degree, and there's the sanctions, and we have the food crisis galloping underneath as well. I don't think that situation has improved dramatically. Yeah, and then to make things even worse, I mean, a lot of these windfall profits ideas from governments, they make a lot of sense, from a popular vote perspective, but it's just sucking out the profits needed in the energy sector to do the investments to expand supply to keep prices lower in the future. So I'm not seeing a lot of encouraging signs on that yet, and we might have peaked on PCE core year on year. But the question is, where do we settle? Do we settle at 3.5-4%? I mean, I don't think I'm smart enough to know where it will end. But I do see a lot of things that will continue to add pressure to inflation, though.
Yeah, I agree, and I think the oil price, as mentioned, it could quickly put a stopper if we go to $125 a barrel to this equity market positive vibe that we're supposedly getting as we come into this week. But let's see. Worth noting, of course, we'll mention it on the calendar as well, but today is a national holiday in the U.S., so U.S. markets are closed. And, you know, we're in the quiet season for earnings here, Peter, but you have a couple of interesting names on your overview there on slide 10.
Yeah, so we ended on Wednesday before we went on national holiday by saying, you know, earnings. We had earnings from Snowflake and Nvidia after the close there on Wednesday, and they were okay, a little bit mixed, but nothing major to either side. You could argue that I think that you saw signs in Nvidia's earnings release that things are slowing down, also in the outlook, and I think that outlook will deteriorate and become worse against the current consensus, as we talked about in the internal call. 25% of all graphic cards sold in a previous survey was going to the crypto mining industry, and with cryptocurrencies under pressure, a lot of pressure, I should say. Also, the weekend we had this restart of Luna 2.0, Luna, so which was this you know, little brother to Tether, and that failed spectacularly as well. There's still a lot of desperation in this industry, and I think that's one of the things to watch for on Nvidia. Looking forward, tomorrow, Salesforce will report, and then on Thursday, Meituan and Lululemon. I think those three are the most important ones for market sentiment in their respective parts of the market. And at Salesforce, obviously being the biggest one with a market cap of $230 billion, analysts are expecting 24% revenue growth for the quarter that ended in April, and a very, very big rebound in operating margins, which should see the free cash flow generation come back to levels that can justify the valuation. So I think there's a lot of stake here for Salesforce. Can they cut down on costs without impacting their sales growth too much, and thereby improving their margins dramatically? That is the key question for Salesforce to answer tomorrow.
Yeah, you mentioned crypto there, and the Bitcoin price is back above 30,000 this morning at least. But I must say, compared to the last couple of bars in the equity market and our speculation complex, we've discussed the sort of ARK Tesla Bitcoin complex. I must say crypto looks a little bit feeble here relative to the role it's supposed to play as sort of a, you know, speculative liquidity indicator. And it's very worth noting as well, don't have it on the calendar here, but perhaps should, that June 1st, so Wednesday, marks the start of quantitative tightening. And I think the very very opaque situation, I mean, the Fed itself doesn't understand how QT operates. It even says that to the market. A lot of market commentators have different signals or on what QT means for the market. If it means higher long rates, I think that's going to be an additional headwind for markets, as some speculate it could mean. But let's just have it in mind as a factor here. And as we look at the macro calendar for this week, the overview on slide 11, I put lots of stuff in red. I think some of the macro data impacts are quite strong here because of sort of where the narrative has switched to. So stuff like CPI figures out from Germany and parts of Europe this week, the Eurozone wide flash CPI is up tomorrow. We have the Chinese manufacturing PMI, but it's more about the news flow and the policy tweaks that are coming to see if COVID restrictions are lifting, as well as the possible political situation at the very top as we look for whether Xi Jinping gets his third term, et cetera, this year. Then we have the Hungary Central Bank up with a 50 basis point rate hike expected tomorrow. A conference board consumer confidence indicator. Interesting in the US because, as we've mentioned, there's many of the confidence readings elsewhere in the world and in the US's own University of Michigan sentiment level have been hitting the rock bottom. This one is still only sort of mean reverting back into what is still a pretty high level. So curious to see that one, as well as the ISMs up on Wednesday for manufacturing and services for Friday. And I put on that JOLTS survey for April. It's, you know, it's not the timeliest data point, but it is the one that was hitting those historic levels, these amazing levels of job openings never seen before in the U.S. economy. You know, at what point are these easing off if we are supposedly seeing a softening growth outlook in the U.S.? I think it's an important question. Bank of Canada on Wednesday expected with a 50 basis point rate hike. It's about the guidance there that is already priced. And then we have all the U.S. employment and earnings stuff up on Friday after the April data set was not terribly inspiring. We'll talk more about that, of course, as Friday approaches. For now, that is a wrap. And let's see how things develop here. We'll be back tomorrow with the next Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter @SaxoMarketCall or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.